Hello everybody, I hope you're all doing well. Welcome back to another episode of Blockchain and Beyond. As always, I'm your host Farzan. On today's episode, we're going to be talking about the steps I would take if I was to go back and learn about blockchain again. So I say this because there's a lot more people coming into the blockchain space. Despite the current market conditions, a lot of people are seeing the potential in it. A lot more enterprises are looking at more detail of what blockchain is and what blockchain can offer. So I think it makes sense to find a way to introduce people who want to learn about the technology to kind of give them a bit of a path. And the path I'm going to outline is not going to be like a super technical path. It's going to be more about the key topics that you need an understanding of to, be comfortable talking about blockchain to other people. So the first part of this is sort of just an introduction to blockchain and its like history. So at its core, blockchain is obviously a decentralized digital ledger of transactions, which uses a variety of means to keep itself secure. So the first key one being its decentralized nature. So unlike traditional databases, which are controlled by a single entity, a blockchain is actually managed by a whole host of distributed computers across the network, and these are called nodes. And no single node has control over data on the blockchain and is more resistant to tampering and manipulation in general. The second topic would be about its security. So here we will look a lot more about cryptography and why cryptocurrencies are called cryptocurrencies, and understanding how cryptography works. In a sense that how does it keep our transactions secure? And this will actually look at parts like hashing. And this is where we can start to build in some slight differences between proof of work and proof of stake and other consensus mechanisms. I think that comes a bit later. And then we can also discuss the transparency of the blockchain, as most transactions will be publicly visible. We can quite easily, understand where perhaps money flows are or where which users are most active on the blockchain. And then I think finally, for sort of like the first set of topics, it's good to talk about the history of the blockchain. And this primarily comes down to Satoshi Nakamoto in 2008 when he published the Bitcoin white paper. And I think everyone should read the Bitcoin white paper. If you're not super technical, I think the first few pages where it gives a bit of background and a bit of context as to why we need a blockchain and what Bitcoin can offer is really useful. So I think even non-technical people should be looking at that. And if you're a bit more technically inclined, then you should definitely read the rest of the white paper as well, because it goes into the key details of a lot of blockchain functionalities effectively. And then once you've gotten on, or once you've read that white paper, I would also look at smart contracts, and not smart contracts in looking at the code, but understanding why we need them and the benefits that they can actually bring. And then moving on from there, at that point, you should have a very basic fundamental understanding of what blockchain is and how it works. And then you can actually start to look at some of the use cases, right? So how can this decentralized system or this digital ledger of transactions be used in the real world, and the different types of blockchains that are out there? So primarily this is focusing on public blockchains and private blockchains. So a public blockchain would be a blockchain which anyone can use. For example, this would be Bitcoin or Ethereum or one of the other major blockchains. But then a private blockchain would perhaps be something such as Hyperledger, or there are even some blockchains out there today which can help you set up your own private blockchain. And this is perhaps more useful for companies in perhaps the medical field or the financial industry, because they can have a lot more control and privacy over their data. If you look at this from the perspective of, say, a bank wouldn't necessarily want their information being published on a public blockchain, even if it was encrypted. So this a private blockchain gives them a way to actually share the data with other parties, whether that's auditors or partner companies, without sharing too much data outside of that effectively. I think there's one extension that we can make to this idea of public and private blockchains is the idea of a hybrid blockchain. So we've seen projects like this before. The one that comes to mind, which is a quite an old project, is called Neo and Ontology. So they are meant to be a public private blockchain pair. So on one end, I can't remember which one is which, but one will be the public blockchain, so anyone can access it, write to it. And the other side would be the private blockchain. So what this means is that on the public blockchain, perhaps, users will have the ability to upload information. Perhaps this could be medical documents or financial documents. But instead of being stored on the public blockchain, there is a connection built between these two blockchains and they would actually be stored on the private blockchain, meaning the information you upload isn't exposed to the wider world. And this means that companies who are working on the private blockchain can take some of this information and publish it on the public blockchain to give, users the transparency that they're perhaps looking for. And yeah, we can then start to expand in some of the use cases. So the use cases we can look at are the application of smart contracts, especially in places like finance. Finance is probably one of the biggest users of smart contracts. When it comes to loans and borrowing, it allows you to have permissionless borrowing. And the idea behind smart contracts is that you can set out a set of conditions, and these conditions will be carried out automatically when a condition is met. Whereas in perhaps the real world, you will write out these clauses in a contract, and if they're met, you need to have someone to verify that the clauses have been met, and then to carry out the actions, which takes a lot of time and effort. But if you're able to do this in an automatic way, it can save a lot of time and money for, everyone involved. And then for me, the next important part is slightly more technical, but this is to do with consensus and understanding how the blockchain comes to an agreement, how the blockchain can verify your transaction, and the different methods of doing so. So here you would actually look at the different consensus algorithms in much more detail. So this would include proof of work and proof of stake. So proof of work is primarily run by blockchains such as Bitcoin, Litecoin. It was used by Ethereum until around September of 2022 when they moved to a proof of stake consensus mechanism. But the idea is that in proof of work, everyone is competing to find a specific value, which effectively solves a set of transactions. That's a very high level overview. And it's definitely worth looking into because that is, I think, one of the most fundamental understandings of how hashing or securing transactions works. And Bitcoin is probably the most explicit example of that. And then you can look at proof of stake. So in proof of stake, your ability to actually publish a set of transactions to the blockchain or verify these transactions is related to how much of that blockchain's token you are actually staking. So in proof of stake, the more tokens you have, the more opportunities you will have to verify transactions. And this comes with its own downsides and its own upsides as well. So proof of stake is generally faster than proof of work. However, people have expressed concerns about decent of centralization of assets in a proof of stake blockchain. And we have slightly seen this, in Ethereum, where a lot of the staking liquidity has been piled into a handful of providers, for example, Lido or Rocket, which isn't good for the network potentially in the long term. So, each consensus mechanism has its own downsides. And then, these blockchains can evolve. So proof of stake hasn't stayed proof of stake forever. Some blockchains are running delegated proof of stake, or some are running proof of authority. And proof of authority compared to proof of stake is more centralized but also faster. And we'll see that on blockchains like Binance Smart Chain. So understanding this and the pros and cons of each consensus mechanism is very important. And it's not very technical in a sense, you don't need to understand full mathematical details. You just need a general understanding of how the process of being chosen as a validator is carried out. The next part for me is understanding the current limitations of blockchain. So the biggest limitation out there is related to scalability. A lot of blockchains suffer from performance issues when too many people are using the blockchain. We have seen this with Bitcoin, we have seen this with Ethereum. In Ethereum and Bitcoin, this is represented by your transaction fees or your gas fees going higher and higher as more people want to use them. There are some blockchains which are looking to solve this or have potentially already solved this. One of the key ones that comes to my mind is Algorand. It can do 6,000 transactions per second. It uses a pure proof of stake consensus mechanism, which is a different one from the other blockchains. And that, of course, comes with its own pros and cons as well, which is for, you know, someone to evaluate if it's for them. So scalability is probably the biggest issue. And, you know, solutions for scalability are being built on Bitcoin and Ethereum. So on Ethereum, we have a lot of layer two solutions such as Polygon or Optimism or Arbitrum. Whereas on Bitcoin, they're building solutions such as the Lightning Network, where you're able to settle transactions within seconds and there's very little transaction fees. So this can allow more people to use the network without struggling or paying high transaction fees. And then I think the other biggest challenge is interoperability. So each blockchain has its own way of writing and storing and formatting data. This makes it difficult to read data from between blockchains. So you need to build specific tools which allow one blockchain to read data from another blockchain. And this can be quite time consuming and also quite resource heavy because you need to have access to both of these blockchains that you want to, you know, read between, and then also write the logic and code between it to understand why that happens. As part of this interoperability space, we can look at bridges. So bridges are a way of transferring one token from one blockchain to another blockchain. And understanding the weaknesses behind them, because bridges have come under a lot of attack recently. There have been a lot of hacks, there have been a lot of vulnerabilities, and hundreds of millions of dollars worth of assets have effectively been stolen through bridges. So building infrastructure which is secure to use for cross-blockchain purposes is also quite important. And then I think to wrap it up, the final point that people should really understand is the current state of the regulation regarding blockchain. In a lot of places, there's very little regulation, or the regulation isn't clear. In the US, for example, there's a lot around securities and understanding if a token can be classed as a security or not, which is related to like investment purposes. The biggest case we've seen about this is the XRP, or rather Ripple case. And, you know, in some countries, blockchain technology may be prohibited to use, and understanding why that is and what the ideas behind it is. Whereas going forwards, you know, how can regulation help increase the adoption of blockchain? And what I mean by this is if a government makes it clear of what we can and cannot use blockchain for, then in that country in particular, users can actually start building the tools and the software that they need to more effectively implement blockchain while being within regulation. Whereas currently they can build, but perhaps it'll be in a year's time, there's regulation against what they have built, and that can cause a lot of issues. So we've seen this with, for example, Tornado Cash, which is a decentralized app on Ethereum, which allows users to send money while hiding their identity. And this raised a lot of concerns in the US, and there have been sanctions against using that smart contract or that decentralized application. So it's a very gray area at the moment with a lot of space to develop, basically. Yeah, and I think that probably covers most of the key topics that I would go about learning if I was to go pick up blockchain again. So just to sort of break that down one more time, it's understanding the decentralized nature of blockchain, how consensus is done, the basic fundamentals of cryptography, and understanding some of the history and the application of blockchain. So with the history, it's initially Bitcoin with Satoshi Nakamoto's white paper, then Ethereum and Ethereum as a smart contract platform and understanding what a smart contract platform means and what it can do. And then going forwards is looking at public, private, and even hybrid blockchains to understand which use cases do they fall under, and then understanding which industries would potentially be using which blockchain and why. I would then say to learn about some of the more technical aspects. So this would be more in terms of the consensus mechanisms, whether that's proof of stake, proof of work, delegated proof of stake, proof of authority. And there's a lot of, you know, combinations in between where at some point it's no longer, you know, you're either one or the other. You're kind of like on a scale somewhere. So I think that would be quite useful for most people to understand, and also the benefits and drawbacks of these, because each of these are also very, very unique. And then again, the limitations of the blockchain, primarily looking at scalability, interoperability and the issue with bridges, which bridges are a solution for interoperability, but they also have a lot of issues which need to be solved. And then finally, understanding the regulatory space is the biggest thing. Honestly, I think that probably covers most of the topics that are key for people to pick up regarding blockchain, at the very start at least. And then from there, you can start just looking into projects which interest you, projects that, you know, you may have your own eyes on, because there's projects coming out every day. There's new developments going on. There's old projects which are still building. There's new projects which are innovating. And it honestly doesn't stop in the blockchain space, which is quite cool. So I think that's something that everyone who's interested should definitely be looking out for. But yeah, I think that covers it for today. Thank you again for listening. As always, feel free to reach out to me on social media. I'll be happy to respond to any questions. And yeah, as always, thank you and goodbye.